Hi, everybody, and welcome back. It's Creating Impactful Legacy, and my guest is Bill Lennon. He was part of other calls we've done together, and we just keep talking to each other. So I just said, why don't you come back on the show and share what you're up to now? Because due to COVID, a lot of people have pivoted, or they've gone new directions, or they figured out something new or different that they want to talk about. So
Definitely.
welcome, Bill.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you want to tell everybody about you and
Yeah, of course.
whatever's happening?
I'm glad that you're healthy and happy. That's kind of my, the number one priority is everybody in the family healthy and happy. And then we'll go from there. And the weather's good today too.
Yeah, because you're sitting outside
I'm
enjoying
sitting
the
outside. Yeah,
warm
it's
weather.
beautiful. Yeah. This is not a backdrop. That is my overgrown hedge back there. Yeah, just so people know. So my name is Bill Lennon. I'm with the HEART program, and HEART is we're on a mission to inoculate people against depression and anxiety. And the thing that we have figured out through approaching research from a different angle is that for most people, the reason that they fall into depression or anxiety or the combination is there's some kind of desire they have. There's something they want to be able to do, something they want to get, something they want to achieve, but they don't know how to, or they think that the methodology or the way to get it is beyond them and that it's magic. And I was in that place 20 years ago. Both my career and my marriage were falling apart, and I couldn't figure out how to get out of that place. And I felt powerless. And powerless is the first step to depression and anxiety. And I was fortunate because I finally had the nerve to talk to some friends about my struggle with my career. And they said, oh, well, they helped me to kind of break it down. And they said, well, this, you've got skills to handle this stuff already. And which I hadn't had the gratitude and the acknowledgement to recognize. And then they said, well, on this other stuff right here, you can learn that. And here's, there was like five things I needed to learn. They're like, here's the first couple. Here's how to go learn those. And you can learn everything else. And so I started learning new skills, and all of a sudden my career changed. I also learned more skills to have an amazingly good divorce. I have the best divorce on the planet. But fast forward to 3 years ago, and I met my now business partner, and we started talking about my technology career and how my teams have done things that people said were impossible. And when I explained to her the process, she said, oh, you use the skills that we use clinically to get people out of the deepest depression, anxiety, and substance abuse. And I said, oh, well, that's amazing. And that started a whole conversation where we're teaching people how to go from struggle to success through a clinically researched set of skills that, my partner, the clinician, has been using for years. And there's 30 years of research behind this stuff.
So tell us a little bit more about the HEART program, because
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So
because most people may not know about it
yeah,
yet.
we're a whole new breed of animal. So HEART is a preventative approach to mental wellness. And it's a very, first of all, like I said, it helps inoculate you against depression and anxiety, but also you can, if you happen to be seeing a therapist, these skills are a great complement to therapy. My partner is an occupational therapist focused on mental wellness, and her in the clinical practice that she worked in. She was teaching people skills in parallel to the therapists that were helping them work on whatever trauma or self-limiting beliefs they might have had. And so these two things dovetail together really well. She still helps therapists who understand the value of the work that we do. For folks that really want to geek out on this, the clinical intervention is called dialectical behavior therapy. That's okay. The majority of what we do. It's a stack of 50 plus skills.
Mm-hmm.
And we've start with that as our foundation. We're also doing mindfulness-based stress reduction, a little bit of cognitive behavior therapy, and whatever the latest neuroscience is that hasn't been tied into these things yet.
Right.
To help people take care of themselves well.
Mm-hmm.
And achieve what they want to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So weren't you working with high school students at one time?
Huh? Yeah. So we started off initially working because we needed a starting point.
Right.
We started off when COVID had arrived, we went into high schools because everybody was virtual. It was very easy. And
yeah.
Our program was all designed to be done online. We started off working with students. We learned a ton through that. And so we've had a little bit of a pivot coming out of that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing a few different things in parallel. First of all, we're training adults
mm-hmm.
who are on campus
mm-hmm.
So that they can model and also teach the kids.
Okay.
One of the things that we got back from the students, one of the pieces of feedback was, it was disconcerting for them to learn better mental wellness skills.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachers were not modeling that.
Oh, okay.
And so that was a bit confusing.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we're teaching adults on campus who are in the realm of mental health.
Right.
Some of those folks are therapists. Some of them are social workers. Some of them are counselors. Some of them are PE teachers.
Mm-hmm.
It's very much depends on the kind of school system.
Right.
We're also, again, because of, you know, kind of pivoting and doing research, we're also working with later teens and young adults
mm-hmm.
who are either working on getting into college or they've gotten in and they can't really handle it or they've dropped out.
Right.
To help them understand where and how the stress has gotten to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we research the reasons for people dropping out, they're all a stress problem.
Right.
Right. It's rare that somebody drops out because they're going off to a career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's unusual. And those people aren't really stressed. They're quite happy, right? They're like, woohoo, mm-hmm. I'm only a junior and I've got a career and I'm out of here.
Yeah.
Most of the time, the reason people are dropping out of college is they're overwhelmed by stress. They don't know what to do about it. And so they bail out. And the dropout rates for colleges now are the highest they've ever been in history.
Mm-hmm.
Something like a quarter of the incoming freshmen are going to drop out.
And why do you think that is? Before their
sophomore year.
Why do you think that is?
So they categorize the reasons, but when you look at what's going on,
mm-hmm.
it's all because they don't know how to handle what they consider the stress of homework
mm-hmm.
or making new friends
yeah.
or time management
mm-hmm.
or what to do in their spare time focusing on their future career.
Right.
It's all these different things where they don't have a skill set to approach that thing and be successful.
Mm.
And it goes back to our foundational thing that we've learned from interviewing all these people is that they have a desire, but they don't know how to achieve it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know who to ask. They don't even know that it's possible
right.
to ask people. And so they stumble into feeling powerless and then things get worse.
Mm.
And so we're teaching them skills for how to think about, how to look at, how to approach all these different problem spaces and really how to take the skills and use them in multiple different contexts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you're talking and I'm thinking about kids just don't feel they can ask for help. So I wonder where they learned that, you know?
Yeah. Part of it unfortunately, is the education system today. Mm-hmm. Our schools, they're trying to cram so much into such a small amount of time.
Yeah.
That frequently the teachers just don't have the space mm-hmm. to answer those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. I have two sons and both of them have come home struggling at different points in time mm-hmm. because they couldn't get help from their teachers, or they felt they couldn't get help from their teacher about specific problems.
Right.
And so I've been coaching them about, mm-hmm. you know, how to solve those kinds of problems. Right.
Right.
Go back to the teacher, ask a question, try to be very focused, see mm-hmm. if you can get a response. Maybe they can't talk to you live in class. Maybe what they need to do is an email. Both of my kids at different points in time have struggled with math.
Yeah.
And they've both come home with different versions of, I don't understand the teacher's explanation. Mm-hmm. And they keep explaining the same way. And yeah. So for both of them, we ended up getting them into one of the local math tutoring groups, mm-hmm. which completely flipped around their ability to do math, mm-hmm. by having a different teacher. Both of my kids have struggled with social anxiety at different times. Mm-hmm. And I've taught them the same skills that I learned and mm-hmm. that we teach people. And they don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. My older one has now actually gotten quite comfortable getting up and doing talks in front of the classroom. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't have a fear of public speaking.
Right.
And that's been great. Both of them have gone through different early stage relationship struggles. Mm-hmm. And we've coached them about that same kind of thing, using the skills that we teach people. Mm-hmm. And both of them are now really comfortable in that realm. Mm-hmm. Relationships may fail. This isn't about having always perfect relationships, but it's about being comfortable with having a relationship, experimenting, and trying to grow the other person. Mm-hmm. And also, if it's not going to work out, then saying, hey, you know, thank you very much. Let's be friends. I got to go because I need something different.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right. So I'm just thinking, as you're talking, is why can't you just offer a program like this as an alternative in schools, or kids have a program they can go to and say, okay, I need help here. You know, how can I?
Yes.
You know, travel on this road.
And part of it is because in middle schools, they're just starting to think about this. Mm-hmm. High schools are so concerned about the academics of getting into college.
Right.
That mental health has been someplace between zero and a very, very low priority. Mm-hmm. And so they do the bare minimum to get by around mental health, mm-hmm. which is they wait till, you know, and I mean, I don't mean to be knocking the schools, but they don't know any better, right?
Right.
They wait till the students are as far out on the edge as they can get.
Yeah.
Then they see if they can provide them a short-term fix mm-hmm. while they try to find some kind of a therapist, rather than teaching them up front mm-hmm. how to approach it. And, you know, part of the problem is that the current methodology for mental health in the US and every place else mm-hmm. is what we call the lifeguard approach. Mm-hmm. And the lifeguard approach is you have a lifeguard at the side of the pool and nobody knows how to swim. Mm-hmm. And the lifeguard keeps pulling people out of the deep end who are unwittingly jumping in. Mm-hmm. And we're all about teaching swimming lessons.
Yeah.
We want to teach people how to swim, how to be able to have fun, how to be able to play where there's no lifeguard. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing about swimming is once you learn how to swim, then you can explore surfing. Mm-hmm. And you can explore diving. And you can explore whitewater rafting, mm-hmm. which gives you a lot more personal confidence and power in the world, for want mm-hmm. of a better way to put it, mm-hmm. to do things that you couldn't have done otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, the mental health part of it, that needs to come first, just as long as when you're first starting school, right? Because you know how to handle this situation, then you can do the next situation, the next situation, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, our long-term goal is that all the adults in the school will have this as a foundational knowledge, just like they all know how to do math.
Yeah.
Right. They all know how to say, go over and grab three books off the shelf, and they know how to explain what three is.
Yeah. Right.
And go up from there, depending on the age of the kids. Right now, that's not possible. The teachers don't know how to swim. That's, and so, you know, we're working on where and how do we get into the schools to teach people what's possible and go from there.
Right.
Yeah.
So maybe, so what are the topics that you're, you know, hoping to address?
So the starting point is really this foundational approach that the struggles people have are largely an ignorance problem. They just don't know any better. Nobody's ever taught them, right? It's like if you don't know how to swim, right? It's not a, there's no shame in not having had the opportunity to learn how to swim.
Right.
Right? It's just a, nobody's ever taught you, right?
Right.
So how do you go about learning the skills to get yourself out of that problem space?
Right.
In a structured and a progressive fashion, because just like math, these skills are in a stack. And you might want to start off math doing calculus.
Right.
But if you don't understand addition and subtraction and algebra and everything else, you can't just dive into calculus, right?
Right. Right.
You have to build your way up, and also understanding how to take a skill into different contexts. You know, I have a great relationship with my kids because I'm using the communication portion of the curriculum that we teach.
Right.
That same communication portion has allowed me to have amazing communication with my software teams and the executives that I reported to, good enough that I could get the executives to change their mental models for things in the company, because I was seeing the world and my team was seeing the world differently than what the executives understood.
Right.
There's a lot of different ways, and this is, you know, people who want to get promotions, but they can't figure out how to.
Right.
It's because they're lacking a set of skills.
Right.
And they're always going to struggle. I mean, they go to a new company, but they still don't have the skills and they're still going to struggle. And once you have the skills, getting promotions becomes quite easy.
Right.
It's this is a very different approach, and it's demystifying the magic. Really. Yeah.
So maybe that should be your workshop, demystifying your magic.
That may be a title of one that we could do. Yeah.
I was just thinking because, you know, like the program sounds, it serves a wide audience, you know, so you have to have different topics for different audiences, right?
Right. And we're, you know, one of the challenges is because we see how valuable this can be for people across so many different contexts, we can't try to do all things to everybody at the same time.
Right.
So, you know, we want to find a starting ground. And so we're really focusing on this teen to young adult audience and the ecosystem around them as a starting point. You know, there's already been research that our kinds of stuff is really good for helping returning veterans, you know, who are coming out of the military, to help them understand how to translate all these skills they learn in the military into civilian language, right? And that's a big challenge. Vets don't often know how to talk about their accomplishments in a military context into civilian language, right? And they have amazing skill sets that the civilian world doesn't know how to think about, talk about, or ask about.
Right.
To the detriment of the civilian world. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. It's the same folks with a lot of times people that are formerly incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
There's already research that dialectical behavior therapy, our underlying intervention, is really, really helpful for helping folks that are formerly incarcerated learn how to manage their emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next layer on top of that is, how do you apply those to improve your relationships, have a great career, and
mm-hmm.
not commit a crime and go back to jail?
Right.
Right. You know, folks that have PTSD mm-hmm. are using this skill set to go from PTSD to PTSG, which is post-traumatic stress growth.
Right.
Right. And the growth side of it is one that people don't talk about nearly enough,
mm-hmm.
but it's very, very possible and mm-hmm. very doable. And there's a bunch of research around it where, you know, two people go through the same experience. One of them comes out much, much stronger, and one of them comes out weaker.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we help the folks that came out weaker become stronger?
Right.
Which is,
right.
again, you know, there's a lot of research and a lot of possibility there. So yeah, for us, it's really
choices, about, choices, choices.
Yeah. Where do we start from? You know?
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just going to say where.
Yeah. And, you know, with the stuff that you're doing now, you know, with your shift into this, you know, helping people make sure that at the end of their life, they've got everything taken care of well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that we read about all the time is people dying with regret that they didn't live well.
Right.
And so a part of what we're teaching people is how to take tiny risks
mm-hmm.
so that they do get to do all the things they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get to the end of their life and have all these regrets,
right,
that they didn't do whatever it was that they had wanted to do when mm-hmm. they were 20.
Right.
And you know, I talk to people all the time and they don't know how to take tiny risks.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for people who started life, you know, like I recently did the work to realize that I started taking tiny risks when I was 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really tiny. It was going out and playing with my friends at night,
mm-hmm.
running around the block.
Yeah.
And just being out at night.
Yeah. You know,
and that's a really, really, you probably did the same thing.
Well, I don't know. We had to go be in the house by 7:30 PM. That's when the lights went on.
I did not have that. Yeah.
But I'm sure that, you know, as a kid, there was little risks that I took anyway, right?
Yeah.
I got punished a lot, so I must have.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. You were taking risks. Yeah. But that's one of those things is, and people, they can stack the tiny risks up.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they're like, yeah, I'm going to go hike Machu Picchu, or
yeah,
I'm going to start a business, or I'm going to write a book, or change careers, or go back to school, or whatever the thing is they want to do.
Right.
Suddenly they're like, oh, what's the tiny risks I can stack up
mm-hmm.
to get there?
Yeah.
And that way, you know, they're, you know, at the end of their life, they don't have regrets.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a big, it's a big challenge to get people to think about how can I celebrate my life rather than let's not right. talk about it.
Right. It's, you know, I think about life as being just a stack of adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, even like raising my kids, like I look at parenting as an adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I purposely arrange things in that adventure context rather than in the what's the least effort context.
Right.
And that's changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know? When my kids were little, every time we went Christmas shopping, they were in a trailer behind my bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
And we would bike to the local mall and I would lock up my bicycle and then I would push them around the mall in this dually trailer we would do all the Christmas shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I would load the trailer with them with presents.
Yeah.
And then take it back outside, hook it back up to the bike, and I would ride home. And, mm-hmm. you know, my kids were crammed into this thing with boxes all around them and everything else. And they always thought it was hilarious and fun.
Yeah.
And a great time. And it changed their mental models about what's possible.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah. All the little things that do make a difference. Right.
And we didn't have to sit in traffic to find parking because there was no traffic to get to the bike rack. You know, we'll just ride in, towing my kids. We would go to the bike rack. I lock, you know, and it's, there's all these different places where you can do things differently, you know, whether it's your career, parenting, relationships, whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. So tell me, where do you want to go from here? What do you need help with, or who, how can I direct?
Yeah, so there's a couple things. One, we need to get more people in the education system to understand what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that we bump up against the most is people saying, I've never heard of that before.
Yeah.
Which is true, because no one's ever tried to do this before.
Right.
And the reason that nobody's tried to do this before is that in the mental health world, there's not as, and you know, not trying to offend anybody who's in mental health, but doing root cause analysis isn't generally part of what therapists are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And because very few therapists actually have deep expertise in DBT, they don't know how to break it down and advise somebody, oh, if you take your DBT skill stack and you apply it this way, that'll improve how things work at your job and you'll be able to get a promotion. Or here's how to adjust it and have a better relationship or get a relationship. You know, or take care of your health, or, you know, communicate better with your parents or whatever. We seem to have, you know, between Barbara and I and our unusual career paths, have come to a place other people haven't arrived at.
Yeah.
So we definitely want to be talking to anybody who's working in the education system, and folks that are, you know, either their students or their parents. You know, on, it's kind of the think globally and act locally model. We recently started talking with a community of young people that they have a support system for people struggling with mental health in a variety of ways, but they don't really have a depth of knowledge for how to help the kids. I'm using the term kids broadly here, how to help the people get out of that struggle. So they can say, yeah, this is tough, but they don't have expertise in, oh, and here's how to get out of there.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, we're coming in saying, hey, we can, you know, we can help with this. And the leadership is like, oh my God, this is exactly what we need.
Yeah.
So any kind of group like that, you know, parents that want to talk about struggles they're having with their kids at whatever level, we're more than happy to talk about that.
Yeah.
You know, organizationally, and then, you know, we're kind of got this fringe program that we're doing, which is helping people with their careers. Just taking these same skills and applying them to the career context and helping them understand what all the pieces are they need to have a successful career, including the ability to change careers and work in different industries.
Right, right.
And it's really, it's applying the same fundamental skill sets to different kinds of problems.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Any final things you'd like to say before we close off?
thank you for the opportunity, first of all. You know, that's awesome. And I, you know, I always think about what's it going to take for me to die happy, you know, which totally ties into what you're doing. And for me, it's about always looking ahead to what are the interesting things I can do to impact the world, irrespective of my age.
Right.
Right. And the, you know, I talk to people who are like, oh, I'm too old to do that.
Yeah.
And they're like 35.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait, seriously, yeah. Like, that's crazy. That's such a self-limiting belief. You can make a career switch. You can make an industry switch, right?
Right.
You can, you know, move off grid and build a house, whatever it is you want to do.
Right.
Age is irrelevant.
Right.
Or whatever the thing is, you can always apply time to solve a problem. And again, you know, and so all about how do you die? What's the things to do to die happy?
Right.
And that's really the biggie.
Yeah. Yeah. No, great thought. I have my head spinning with ideas for you after. So.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you. Great. I'll
put them out to you and see what you think.
Great. Okay. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much for our conversation today, Bill. I know I enjoyed it, and we're going to have more conversations after, I'm sure. So if anybody has any ideas for Bill, how he can get into schools and maybe talk to parent groups or large people that have common issues you know, basically it's common issues, or maybe a vet that has a program, they're looking for a speaker, right, to talk about how you can help these vets, you know,
integrate. Speakers, you know, we're happy to start with the conversation by talking about here's what's possible and here's a framework.
Right.
And then figuring out how people can, you know, how we can help start teaching people. Right.
Yeah.
And get them to start moving down this path and improving the quality of their life.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, Bill, we're going to close, and definitely we'll be in touch. And for anybody that's listening, you know, help Bill out and help yourself out at the same time. So
thank you very much.
Be kind to each other, because that's all we have. Okay. Thank you, everybody. Okay. Bye-bye.